welcome to Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio at blogtalkradio.com. You can interact with the show by calling 760-888-5749 or use the hashtag PWP Radio on Twitter. Here are your hosts, Jay Leno and Will TLD Vapidez.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Jersey Strong Jay here, PWP Radio, episode number 36. I can't believe we're 36 episodes in. Pretty awesome. A lot going on in the wrestling business, but the most important thing going on right now are the events that took place down in Oklahoma City, the town outside Oklahoma City. It's just sad. All these natural disasters are absolutely crazy. And my thoughts and prayers and the whole entire Pro Wrestling Powerhouse team go out to everybody who was affected. It blows my mind to bits. You know, up here in Jersey, we had Hurricane Sandy, of course, everybody knows, or Superstorm Sandy, whatever they're calling it. And it's absolute insanity that this weather is just creating such a, it's just hard to explain, you know, and I just feel bad for everybody down there, everybody who lost lives, lost their pets, lost their homes, lost everything, you know, they got to start over. And just on the verge of summer here, you know, it's going to start getting hot out. So I hope people start banding together and helping people down in Oklahoma City, just because everybody was so great up here in Jersey. Hurricane Katrina, everybody was great down there too. So my thoughts and prayers go out, and I'm sure I'm echoing what everybody else has to say about it, including my listeners and my other co-hosts and everybody else on the PWP team. So just to get that out of the way, just want to kick the show off tonight. We got a big night ahead of us. We got a lot to talk about in the WWE. A lot's been going on, a lot of news out there. Extreme Rules is in the books. I don't know what you thought about the show, but I know what I thought about it. I thought it was pretty decent. But Raw is also in the books, and there was a couple big things happened last night on Raw. But before we get going on that, we will have none other than Eric Tapout, or Eric Tlesko, whatever you want to call him, from Pro Wrestling Syndicate. He's the owner, co-owner, I should say, and promoter of that company. It's one of the biggest companies in the independents right now. And he will be on during hour number 2 at 10 o'clock p.m. approximately. And we'll have a lot to talk to him tonight about, especially their show last Saturday in Queens, New York, and their show coming up in Monroe, New Jersey on June 9th, featuring the American Dream, Daddy, Dusty Rhodes, the Lariat, Stan Hansen, and Disco Inferno himself, among many more past and future stars of the business. So it should be great to talk to Eric. Also want to give a congratulations to our PWP babe. We have been talking about Dana Adiva a lot lately, but the episode that she's been filming of True Life, I'm Too Beautiful, something along those lines. I'm not sure what the exact title of the show is, but it will be airing on MTV this coming week. Check your local listings for when that show will air. Congratulations, Dana. You're absolutely gorgeous, beautiful. We'll have you back on the show soon. I can't wait to talk to you. But make sure you check me out on Twitter, at PW Powerhouse. I have been tweeting a lot lately. There's been a lot going on around here, but I'm going to get back on that ship, start tweeting again. Facebook's facebook.com/Pro Wrestling Powerhouse. Facebook's kind of been cracking down on our social networking reach. They want us to pay for each individual post to get it out to more people. So I don't want to do that. Who wants to pay for that kind of stuff, you know? I just don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. It's not worth it. So I need you guys to go out there and share our posts, share our pictures, do what you can to help out Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio and ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com, where I'll be posting a couple of articles tonight. There's a couple new things on there from Zach Fellows, Jonathan Towers, Deron Browning, and others. So we're kicking ass. Pro Wrestling Powerhouse doing pretty good. And hopefully the wrestling business, hopefully something big happens. That's what we need. We need that boom. We need something big to take place, because it just feels kind of dull after WrestleMania. And a lot of people thought WrestleMania was dull, but the business in general, not much is really happening. That seems to be the trend over the last couple of years. And, you know, hopefully things pick up. That's all we can really hope for. If you're listening, get into our chat room, chat with us, and give us a call all night. 760-888-5749. Give us a call and talk to us about whatever you want to talk about for the first hour. We'll discuss anything. We're also going to talk a little bit about Austin Aries and what happened there. But without further ado, let's bring in my main man, my co-host. How about Toph, man? What's going on, my brother? How you doing today?
I'm doing good. Before the show started, I was listening to a very interesting interview from Ahmed Johnson, and maybe something we can talk about in a later date, but he was interviewed by some fellow podcaster friends of mine, and he was just talking about how things worked in the mid-90s, and it's a pretty good interview, so very enlightening.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I'll be sure to check it out. Ahmed Johnson, I haven't heard from him in a long time. Last time I heard from him was, I think, that picture that kind of came up on the internet last year where he just ballooned into this gigantic guy. He's not really, doesn't really look like Ahmed Johnson too much anymore. So that's cool. Yeah, definitely go check that out. Also like to bring in, how about JCD, John Demicelli? What's going on, my man?
What's up?
Not a whole lot, brother. Just, WWE Extreme Rules is in the books. Raw is in the books. And, John, since we just brought you on, did you watch Extreme Rules, man?
I didn't get to watch the pay-per-view. I followed it online, though, so I from what I read, not seeing the show, and I'll grab it, you know, at some point. It didn't seem like a bad show. It seemed, you know, I know a lot of people are hooting and hollering about some of the endings, but I'm sure we'll get into it tonight. And I thought Raw, I watched Raw last night on my DVR, and I thought Raw was fine. I really have no complaints about it. I don't think, you know, anyone was buried or set up to fail last night, but I'm sure we'll get into that as the night goes on.
Yeah, absolutely. Extreme Rules was a good show. It wasn't spectacular by any stretch of the imagination. I think it falls somewhere in the middle when it comes to these, these shows, if you want to call them. But it's been a great show the last few years, and the matches were fine. The matches were great, but at times it just seemed to be a little bit dull because nothing really happened. I was waiting for some kind of, like, angle to take place, something to kind of start a new story, put something in a new direction. I thought there was going to be some kind of big swerve in the Triple H Brock Lesnar match, and that didn't really come. But all in all, it was pretty decent. Toph, did you check out Extreme Rules the other night?
No, I didn't watch it. It was a filler pay-per-view, so I didn't bother watching.
Yeah, it was one of those things where it could have gone a lot of ways. I kind of like how they built off the John Cena Ryback feud, and they're kind of going to bring it to a head next month. And who knows, it might be just the second match out of a three-match series. Not really sure what they're going to do, but I thought the Last Man Standing match was pretty solid, except for, obviously, the ending, which would have been cool. It would have been all right if there was an actual finish involved, but it was a no contest. But we had the Extreme Rules post-game show, so if you want to go listen to that, or any of our interviews that we've had in the past, you know, including John Morrison, Kevin Matthews, Bret Titus a couple times, Nigel McGuinness, you know, they go on and on. Ivelisse Velez, the Big O, the Blossom Twins, tons of interviews on the PWV Radio Network. Go check us out on iTunes. Just go over to iTunes, type in the Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio Network or PWP Radio. Should come up either way. And give us a download. Go check out some of our shows on iTunes. That's the easiest way, best way to listen. And you can always go into our archives on blogtalkradio.com and check it out as well. But, if you want to listen to our analysis on Extreme Rules, check out the post-game show that we did. But tonight we're going to focus on Raw, and the thing I want to really talk about the most is the biggest thing that happened, I thought, and that was Paul Heyman debuting, and I'm going to say debuting because whenever a wrestler is repackaged and there's a new gimmick, I just discount their old name. You know what I mean? Like, it's pointless to bitch and moan about what this guy's name is. I actually think the name's pretty good. But formerly known as Michael McGillicuddy, real life name Joe Henning, Curtis Axel debuted as the newest Paul Heyman guy. I was pumped about it. I knew it was going to be somebody we either haven't seen in a while, but I knew he was going to be young and maybe making a debut or a re-debut. I knew it wasn't going to be Rob Van Dam. Anybody who thought Rob Van Dam was going to come back to the WWE, give me a break. I mean, come on. Who would want to see that anyway? RVD is passe, man. His last run in freaking TNA was garbage anyway. He was going through the motions, and we just don't need that. We don't need to go backwards. We need to go forward, and that's what happened last night. So, Toph, I don't know if you watched Raw. Maybe you did. What were your thoughts on Curtis Axel's debut last night?
I thought it was just fine. I saw a lot of people were disappointed. people were saying, oh, they wanted RVD to come back, or they wanted Batista to come back. And I just think it's hypocritical. You know, we as fans talk about how WWE needs to focus on the future instead of focusing on the past. And, you know, we finally get a legit surprise. I don't really think anyone saw that coming. And, you know, we finally get a new guy getting repackaged. And, you know, we're finally getting a step in the right direction. And people are just, you know, complaining about him. It's like, you know, come on. I mean, I thought that re-debuting him on the anniversary of Macho Man Randy Savage's, the second anniversary, I thought that was a great move because everyone knows that Randy Savage and Mr. Perfect were great friends. Randy Savage even did a song for him. I like how his theme song was basically a remixed version of Mr. Perfect's theme. That was cool. You know, and as far as, like, oh, his lack of mic skills go, well, when Steve Austin was TV champion, he sucked on the mic, too. But he got over thanks to Heyman, or Paulie Dangerously. When Brock Lesnar first came in, he wasn't good on the mic, but then being in Heyman's presence helped him. So this is a good move, and, you know, this is a, you know, I don't really have anything bad to say. Probably one of the best moves they've made. Now, I'll say it's the best move they've made this year. So I hope everything works out for him.
Yeah, it was great. I think this is a good, really, really big opportunity for Paul Heyman to possibly add more guys. I'm not saying right away. I'm not saying do it next week, but maybe in a month. Maybe get Curtis Axel one pay-per-view match out of the way and a couple big victories, and then you bring in another guy from NXT and make him a Paul Heyman guy as well, and slowly build up the stable idea. I think it would be really cool. And then you could have, you know, either bring back CM Punk as a part of the stable or bring him back to feud with the stable. Whatever you want to call it, the Heyman guys, or I doubt they'll use the Dangerous Alliance, but I think that would be awesome.
I would do is I would pair Heyman up with somebody from each division. Pair him up with a tag team, pair him up with a mid-card, pair him up with a diva. You know, pair him up with someone in each division so that way there's always something going on in each division, because that tag team and diva division could really use some credibility right now. So.
Yeah. I absolutely agree. How about you, John, your thoughts on Curtis Axel's debut? We're not going to talk about his match yet. We'll talk about that next. But just the debut and the great build that Paul Heyman gave us through the announcement.
Tolt nailed it right on the head. He nailed it right on the head. All you see is, I want something new on Raw. I want Vince to do something new. Vince does something new, and exactly. The keyboards, the fat fingers on the keyboards start wigging out and, you know, all that. I thought Heyman, you know, did everything right with it. He the way he explained the concept of the name, everything. And I like Tope's idea of give him a diva, give him a tag team. Yeah, I like it. And I like your idea of, you know what, maybe a month, 6 weeks from now, someone from NXT who maybe one of these guys who's been down there for like 2 years, not someone they just signed, you have them turn around and have Heyman be like, no one wanted to give him a chance. Triple H didn't want to give him a chance, and I am. You know, I loved it. I thought it was great, and it opens the door for a lot of fun things.
Yeah, there are a lot of different directions they can go with it, but I especially liked how Paul Heyman just made it feel so special last night. Nobody else can do that the way he did it. You know, he's a great bullshit artist. Everybody knows about that. If you haven't seen the recent ECW documentary called Barbed Wire City, I suggest checking it out. I'm not going to say it was 10 out of 10, but I'd give it somewhere in the middle, about a 7 or an 8. I thought it was pretty good. And they had a portion where they talked a lot about Paul Heyman and how good of a bullshit artist he was and everything, and how he could just, you know, sell you on anything he truly believed. And he really did that for me last night, because I started getting that feeling in the pit of my stomach that something special was about to happen. When I first saw Michael McGillicuddy walk out, I said, oh, what the hell? You know, Michael McGillicuddy, what the, you know, at first that was my initial reaction. But then once the promo started, once I got the fact that why they're calling him Curtis Axel, I started to like it. And he's a good wrestler. And I think that putting him with Triple H immediately helped him out, although a lot of people are talking about the ending to that match, how if you just tuned in at that point, you'd have no idea Curtis Axel was really involved at all. And I was hoping for like a possible Curtis Axel would attack Triple H when he was all hurt with the concussion or whatever. I thought that was a perfect opportunity for him to freaking go after Triple H and put him out for good. But I guess for some reason that wasn't in their plans. So, Toast, What were your thoughts on the initial booking of Curtis Axel, putting him in a match with Triple H right off the bat?
Now, that I disagree with. I understand what they were going for. They were trying to go for the HBK Owen Hart thing. That might be a little too old school for some of our listeners, but, you know, anyone that's been watching for a while, they know what I'm talking about. They tried to go for the concussion thing. My main pet peeve with Triple H, and I believe you, I think you talked about this in one of your articles on the website, is Triple H just has this bad habit of, like, every time something's over, it's like he's a magnet and he just feels the need to attract himself to it. He took what should have been a moment about getting a new guy over, and he just transformed it into a moment about himself, about, you know, it was a whole segment based off him, like, you know, pretty much if you just turned it in, you wouldn't have known that he was fighting a new guy. It just, you know, he just has this way of absorbing all the attention to himself, and I was not a fan of that at all.
Yeah, you know, me either. I get it in a sense how it's a little bit different. You know, you take this guy, you put him with Triple H immediately, and that initially should make him feel like a special talent to the fans. You know, that he's getting right in there with one of the all-time greats, a guy who's been on Raw for, Jesus, 16, 17 years now, something along those lines, and somebody who's solidified himself as a multi-time WWE champion, and I could just go over Triple H's credentials all day long. I know a lot of people hate him out there, but that's just a fact. And the ratings on Raw proved that there was interest in that match. The ratings actually went up for the third hour, which is something that doesn't usually happen. Usually those ratings tank when hour three comes along. And especially with, you know, no John Cena on the card, no Brock Lesnar, no CM Punk, I kind of think that it was smart to have Triple H wrestle in the main event. I just do. I think it was a good move, although I do agree that, you know, if you're going to do that HBK-type angle, they should have done it the right way. And I don't really think they did. I was just waiting for something to happen, and all you got was...
Yeah, the big thing didn't happen. Like, you know, when Owen took out Sean, he bragged about it. So even though Sean faked the injury, it got Owen over. And when Owen did the botched pile driver on Austin, they even did that T-shirt, Austin's Owen 316, I just broke your neck. So if you're going to have Triple H do that angle, at least have the new guy take him out. That way he can brag about it. And that didn't even happen. It was just... Oh, I'm not feeling well. It didn't do anything for him. It was just another moment to just give Triple H more TV time. I don't agree with that.
Yeah, that's the part that really baffled my mind. The only part that baffled my mind. I thought it was cool up until then. How about you, John? What were your thoughts on this whole Triple H Curtis Axel match that took place?
See,
at the end of the
road? I'm gonna disagree with this. I think the beauty of the Owen thing was Owen didn't do it the next night. Or Owen didn't do it that night at SummerSlam with the T-shirt. It developed over time. You know, it turned into Owen screwed up to I crippled Austin when it was an accident. You know, I knocked HBK, you know, senseless. Let Axel cut a promo next week saying I took out Triple H, and let him believe that and let that be his story, whereas, you know, the quote-unquote reality of it will be it was the effects from the steel cage match with Lesnar. But let Axel kind of build that up, that was his doing, no one else's. And you know what? Part of being a heel is, you know, coming up with this false sense of reality and believing your own, you know, your own bullshit and whatnot, and, you know, telling people, you know, the sky is green when it's really blue. I think give this to Monday night. If he doesn't cut that type of promo, then I'll say, yeah, you know what, this was more about Triple H. But if he comes down and cuts that promo and says, I destroyed Triple H my first night, he's gone, he doesn't even remember who he is, this and that, you know, then it's fine. You know, let him get heat that way.
Yeah, I can see it that way as well. I really do, but I just thought that there was something missing. I think they could have had a big opportunity if Curtis Axel just destroyed Triple H. I mean, Paul Heyman was alluding to how nobody knew who Brock Lesnar was when he came out on Raw in 2002 and destroyed Al Snow, I think it was like Spike Dudley, those guys. He just destroyed. He mowed these guys over for a couple weeks in a row. That's how you got the feeling that this guy is just a freak of nature monster. If you know, Curtis Axel would have done that to Triple H in some way, shape, or form, then I think it could have gotten over better for the fans. But,
yeah, but you know what, though?
Sorry, John, I just put you on hold. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. I would agree with you on that, but you know what? In a day and an era where they try to make it more reality-based, the fact that Heyman held him back, they tried to play up that whole, despite the hatred between Heyman, Lesnar, and Triple H, you know, there was a moment of, you know, compassion there because something more than just, you know, an ass-kicking during a match was wrong. You know, they tried to play up the seriousness of it. So I think that's why you didn't see McGillicuddy go after him. And that could be part of his promo. Like, you know what, I would have taken you out. I would have kept going. But, you know, he meaning Heyman, he made me show you compassion. The next time I get you in the ring, I'm not going to show you compassion. And you know what? Have him take out a few guys along the way. Have him face like a Killings next week. And have him, you know, be, you know, knock Killings out. Put, you know, put a couple of guys on the shelf, you know, to play up that, you know, shoot, you know what? If Heyman didn't call him off, yeah, maybe he would have finished Triple H off. You know, this could... I see where everyone's like, yeah, this was Hunter made it more balanced, but he really might not have, especially with the fact that Hunter is a big fan of his. This is, you know, this is not the old 2003, 2004, even 2005 Hunter where, okay, something's hot, let me get my hands on it and crush it. You know, this is still the Hunter that in 2011, you know, once he gained the confidence in Punk, he helped him and Punk put Miz and Truth over when they were red hot going into Survivor Series. Hunter has not touched the Shield. He's,
I completely disagree with that, but okay.
Okay.
I mean, what you said about Awesome Truth, that's fine, but I think the majority of that year in 2011, Triple H buried the entire roster. Awesome Truth was like the only thing he didn't bury.
Wait, but how did Triple H bury the roster in 2011 when he wrestled two matches? He wrestled against Undertaker.
Everything he did in 2011 was horrible. It's so bad we could dedicate a new podcast just to that, and I want to take up time.
Of all the years that Hunter didn't bury everybody, 2011 is probably the least one. He worked Undertaker, Punk, Awesome Truth, and Nash.
Okay, and we will discuss this on a future episode because I don't want to take up Jay's time. I can just do an epic shoot on every bad thing Triple H did. 2011, he did nothing but bury people. But, okay, we'll agree to disagree.
Okay, so, yeah, I mean, other years I'll give you, but I don't know about 2011.
Well, that's the thing, you know, we could talk about Triple H for an entire two-hour show, probably. I've already given my thoughts on his in-ring wrestling career in a couple articles, a couple different articles, how he kind of always interjects himself in the hot thing that's going on. And I think this, what he did last night, was kind of the exact opposite. He interjected himself to kind of help a young talent, in a sense, and also start a storyline for himself where I believe something's going to go on with the concussion angle. I don't know if this would have happened if Dolph Ziggler didn't suffer the concussion. Maybe it's the same thing. Since we're talking to the town with Dolph Ziggler and the concussion, maybe Triple H is like, well, everyone's talking about Dolph and the concussion. Maybe I'll get a concussion now. Who knows?
About Axel, though, the only negative I'll give him, and it's not really his fault, you were just talking earlier about, you know, have him destroy, you know, R-Truth or Kofi or something like that. The only negative is, you know, one of the biggest problems in WWE, at least for me, is their lack of credible baby faces. So it's like when you're trying to build that new heel, or if you want to build him as a heel, like, you know, how do you build him up when there's so little faces for fans to care about? So I'm just sitting here thinking, like, you know, who can he feud with? Like, who's going to be that first big feud to get him over? And, you know, that mid-card is just dry. It's empty. You know,
yeah.
Some of the best mid-card guys are either injured or they're getting near the tail end of their retirement. There's just not many solid mid-card baby faces.
You're right, it's dry, but you know what? There's enough guys that still will get a decent enough reaction that if he destroys one or two of them, it will help as he moves on. If, you know, Truth, although they've done nothing relevant with Truth in probably a year, Truth is still enough of a name that, you know, if he beats him, it will mean something. Kofi, the same thing. You know, I'll agree with you, there's not much after that, but some of these guys still have enough somewhat name recognition that it could matter. And that's all you need them to do. You just need them to go through the layers of baby faces. Truth, Kofi, Miz, you know, Kane maybe, Brian, whatever the case is, just have them go through them.
I think he'll probably be with Jericho by mid-June, because they seem to just rush Jericho every time they're trying to get a heel over.
And that's fine, and you know what? Jericho will make him look like $1 million in the process.
Yeah.
Absolutely, and I think maybe a guy like Orton or Sheamus would be good, because they just seem to be wallowing around doing nothing right now after, I'm sure, the feud with Big Show is over, and obviously the feud with Mark Henry is over for Sheamus. So I think Curtis Axel should really, they should book him against, instead of like Kofi or R-Truth, these guys who have been used as heel bait for all these years just to like get that beat down. It's happened to Kofi so many times, I don't even want to talk about it. But if you use Sheamus, and give him like, I'm gonna go as far as saying it would be pretty high profile if it was Sheamus. You know what I mean? Like Sheamus.
The problem with Sheamus and Orton is the WWE seems to be confused on exactly what tier placement they put them in. I remember Cody Rhodes brought this up back when he still had his mask back in 2011, when he was having his little mini feud with Randy Orton, and Cody talked about how he wanted to bring prestige back to the title, but as many times as he had fought Randy Orton, it was never for the Intercontinental title. And it's like, how many times have we seen Sheamus and Randy Orton fight an Intercontinental champion who at the time would have been like Wade Barrett or Cody Rhodes, or you see them fight a United States champion like an Antonio Cesaro, and it's like a great match, but the belt is never on the line. And so, you know, it's like when you keep beating these guys and the belt's not on the line, it's really confusing on where exactly that you place them. And then you have guys like Jericho and Rey Mysterio that have won world championships, but even after they win world championships, they go back and win mid-card championships. And really, it hasn't hurt their career, at least I don't think it has. So, you know, I think they need to kind of break this little barrier of having Orton and Sheamus just, you know, never really losing cleanly to mid-carders. I don't think it's going to hurt their careers. You know, just have Orton lose to, you know, or have Sheamus lose. I mean, you guys see where I'm coming from?
Yeah, they've done it with Orton. They've done it with Orton here and there. Like, Orton's put over Barrett, and I think Orton's even put over Ziggler. And it's
he put
him
over in Survivor Series.
Yeah, and then it's like, all right, well, he's going to, all right, so Orton's willing to do it, but it seems like, you're right, they never want to do it with Sheamus.
Yeah.
No.
They did it with Sheamus. they did it with Sheamus. Sheamus had a run with the United States Championship after he was WWE Champion. But I get what you're saying, because at this point, after his feud, because he was feuding, he was holding and feuding for that World Heavyweight title for over a year. You know what I mean? It was just, it seemed like over a year. Maybe it was a little less. But he was in that picture for a really long time there, and he just had like a series of matches, whether it was against the Big Show or against Alberto Del Rio, time and time again. You know, so it's time for him to maybe kind of solidify himself in the mid card and maybe go after one of those mid card titles again. I wouldn't mind seeing personally Sheamus Dean Ambrose at this point, because he's another guy, you know. And let's switch gears here and talk about the Shield, who now hold. Dean Ambrose holds the United States Championship, and Rollins and Reigns hold the tag team titles, which is awesome in my opinion. I think it's cool. It kind of reminds a little bit of the Four Horsemen or Evolution in some way, shape, or form. But is Dean Ambrose, though, if I'll give you this, because he's now working singles matches and we're getting to see a little more of him, is he the type of guy to not only, A, bring a little bit of prestige back to this United States title, but, B, be a future world champion in WWE?
Yes.
Oh.
So, if that was you, bro.
I can't answer that question. It's not about bringing prestige. It's really just about of whether or not WWE cares. I mean, Cesaro was a great U.S. champion. He had the belt for a long time, and he was beating a lot of people, and he was putting on great matches, and then just out of nowhere, he just starts jobbing. It just seems like, you know, WWE, they have, like, this little toy thing. It's like they see each superstar like a toy. They're enjoying them, and then for whatever reason, they get tired of them, toss them aside, and just give it to someone else. So I really can't answer that question, because it just seems like, you know, they're just booking on the fly. I really can't answer that.
Sure, and that's what they've been doing for a long time, but I also tend to think that if somebody came up with this idea to put all these belts, to put these belts on the Shield, and you need to make Dean Ambrose your United States champion, you really don't have to job out Cesaro like you did that many times, but you need a bridge to get there. You need him to drop it. You need a transitional champion, and that's what Kofi Kingston was. But, you know, whatever happened with Cesaro, and we've talked about it before, whether it was some kind of punishment or growing pains or whatever report about him being, quote, unquote, boring, whatever that may be, whatever the case may be with him, they just decided that the belt needed to get off him in some way, shape, or form. And they did it the way they did it, but now they got it on the guy they want it on. So, John, what are your thoughts on Dean Ambrose and his possible bringing prestige back to the United States title and being a future world champion?
Yeah, I you know, Ambrose is going to be, you know, I mean, it's no secret. John Moxley, everyone knew he was going to be destined for greatness. Anyone who says he is surprised by this, no. You know, I mean, he can get it. He's the type of guy that I wouldn't be surprised if he goes into Mania with the United States title. I think this year is too early for any of them to win Money in the Bank, although that would be a great story with the someone in the Shield running around with a briefcase. I think it's a year too soon. I don't know if they'll keep these guys together long enough for that to happen, but Ambrose definitely, especially with the way he's looked in his singles matches, he's going to be, you know, not that there's going to be a breakout star of the Shield, because they're all going to be really good when they go on their own, but he's going to probably be the guy that does the most, and he's got everything. He's got the look, he's got the work on the mic, and he's got the in-ring ability. He will be that guy in 2014, he's going to be the man.
Okay. I don't think the Shield is going to be in Money in the Bank match. It seems that WWE is keeping them away from gimmick matches. I thought that they were going to be in the Royal Rumble or, like, interfere in the Royal Rumble to screw over certain people, and they weren't even involved in the Rumble. They didn't use them in a chamber match either. They just seem to be keeping them away from gimmick-based matches. I don't think we'll be seeing them in Money in the Bank.
Yeah, no. Like I said, I know they wouldn't do it, but, I mean, how great would that be, though? The fact that, you know, if they were, the fact that one at any time that music could hit and one of them could come out from the crowd with the, you know. But, like I said, they wouldn't do it, but that would work for them.
No, I mean, it would be cool. But I do think if they are in the Money in the Bank, I think that would be the beginning of the end of the group, more than likely.
And
yeah,
that's okay, because I still think that Roman Reigns will be the breakout star eventually. I don't think he's the best guy in the group as far as in-ring work is considered, but I see him having that Batista factor, where Batista was just awful in the ring for so long, for like years. He was just horrible. But eventually he kind of broke free, and whether Roman Reigns has that charisma or not remains to be seen, but he might have it. They might do a similar situation with him down the line. He definitely has the look. He's definitely jacked to the gills, and that's something that obviously Vince McMahon likes, and I think he's a future huge star for WWE. But yeah, I agree. I think it's cool what they're doing with the Shield. It was cool that they took the belts off of Team Hell No finally, and we'll see what happens with them. I mean, the road for Daniel Bryan over the past year has been rocky. You know, last year around this time, he was embedded in this feud with CM Punk over the WWE Championship. It was a love triangle. A lot of people were complaining about it. A lot of people hated it. They put on fantastic matches. But eventually, somehow, he got in this tag team with Kane. And they have had just an epic run as a tag team. And what I want to ask you guys is, now that the tag team titles are off them, is this the time, Toph, to break up Team Hell No?
No. They need to stay together. I keep asking people, why do you want to break them up? And every single answer is the same. They just personally want to see Daniel Bryan in a singles role. I'm like, okay, what do the casual fans want? When I look at Team Hell No, they remind me of the New Age Outlaws. Now, Kane and Daniel Bryan are by no means a Road Dogg and a Billy Gunn. But the point I'm making is when before the New Age Outlaws were formed, Billy Gunn and Road Dogg were really just lost in the shuffle. They were doing absolutely nothing. But then when they teamed together, they were finally able to break that barrier. Look at all the stuff that Team Hell No has done as a tag team. They were in a six-man tag against The Shield, teamed up with The Undertaker. They've been involved in all these matches with John Cena and Ryback. If they went as a tag team, none of that would have happened. They still get consistently some of the best reactions every night. The goat face and the Team Hell No shirts, they still sell just fine. And in order for the Shield to be a good tag team, they need to have good challengers to fend them off. And your best challengers are Team Hell No. There's absolutely no reason to break them up. They're doing just fine. They're the best thing for the tag team division in years, and the only reason fans want to break them up is because they selfishly want to see Daniel Bryan in a singles role, which he will get eventually down the road. But just right now, there's no reason. They're just fine to be a tag team. And besides, what's Kane going to do? Don't be selfish. Don't just think about Daniel Bryan. What's Kane going to do? If Team Hell No breaks up, Kane's screwed.
Yeah, I can't agree with you more, man. How about you, John? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's too early. I would like to see them go through, you know, maybe one or two rematches against the Shield, play, you know, then start to maybe play up some descent. I want to see them together at least through the year. And then, you know, around Royal Rumble time, we can reexamine it and let Brian move on to bigger things, you know. And then, you know, Kane's still enough of a name that he'll never be a forgotten guy. You could always find something for him to do. So that's not an issue, but I don't want to see it just yet. I think take it to the new year, and then, you know, we'll do what we got to do at that point.
See, the way I see it, they're going to induct Paul Bearer in the Hall of Fame next year anyway, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if they're gonna induct him, you know, there's gonna be some type of angle. I mean, you know how WWE is, and you know they like to build WrestleMania pretty early. Sometimes they start as early as November, or sometimes even December. So, you know, then, you know, I think that'll be a good time to break up Team Hell No, because then Kane can break away from Bryan and do whatever he's gonna do, and Bryan can do whatever he's gonna do. But I think for the rest of this year, they should stay together.
I think they'll still play up the dissension a little more than they have in recent weeks. There hasn't been a lot of dissension between the team like there was. They teased the breakup a lot of times throughout this past 6 months since Mother's Marine they had. But I think they'll build that tension a little bit more throughout this year, and it'll be on again, off again, for no doubt about it. And I really think they could have a great run with Rollins and Reigns. I think these guys can have multiple matches into the summer and just continually have a feud. And if you want to build a division, that's how you do it. You kind of just – you got to make you kind of feel like the days where it was the Dudley Boys, the Hardy Boys, Edge and Christian. You just give them match after match. Give them – maybe you have a TLC match. Maybe you somehow get another tag team involved and do something crazy like that. Who knows? But I think it's limitless at this point. But if I'm betting, I think they'll break them up sometime before WrestleMania 30, if I'm a betting man, because I really see Daniel Bryan having a big match at that card, at that show, and I don't think it'll be a tag team match. But that's just me. I don't know what's going to happen. But let's switch gears a little bit. That's our WWE talk, and I want to talk a little bit about what we talked about last week, and that's Austin Aries. We found out that he was indeed suspended, fined by TNA Wrestling. And after this all happened, despite we saw Spike TV's comments on it and everything, I just want to know, Toph, and I know you have some serious thoughts on this issue. Has your opinion changed at all? Do you still think, did they do the right thing, or should they not have fined Austin Aries at all?
Oh, well, you know, I've cooled down a little bit, and I apologize for the rant last week. So, you know, Aries apologized as well. And, you know, it was caught up by TMZ, which is, you know, a pretty big deal. Unfortunately, when TMZ catches something, it's usually negative. So, you know, you don't want your organization coming off as sexist or whatever. So I guess finding was the right move.
Yeah, I really think so, too, because you have this tag team division where there's only a couple tag teams in TNA. So there's like three, and the division revolves around them, and that's just fine. They're all good workers. They have great matches and whatnot. But if you take Austin Aries out of that equation, you're down to two teams, and you just can't have that happen at this point. Bobby Roode is floating around.
Speaking of that, what is your opinion on this James Storm thing? What are they doing with him?
I don't know. He's just kind of wallowing around. Like, you know, who's going to be his tag team partner? Is he injured?
I don't know, man. I hope it's not Chris Harris.
Oh, man, could you imagine? That would be a mess. I hope not, too. I hope it's somebody.
And don't get me wrong, I'm a huge fan of you know, America's Most Wanted. They were a great tag team. You know, James Storm, he's a very underrated tag team guy, you know. But, yeah, I mean, America's Most Wanted was a great tag team. But, I mean, Beer Money was just clearly the better tag team. He had better chemistry with Robert Roode. They were more over as Beer Money. I mean, Triple H tried to get them both several times, still is trying to. And now he's kind of turned into his own single star. For me, it's like at this point in James Storm's career, for him to just, if he was to get back with Chris Harris and reform America's Most Wanted. That would be like Shawn Michaels coming out of retirement. And of all the things he could do, he just decides to reform the Rockers. Like, what?
Yeah.
You know, like, why? Why would you do it at this stage in your career? It's just, yeah, I don't know what they're doing. I hope it's going to be like someone random, like maybe Joe or something, or Crimson, or, you know, so just something. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure the match at Summerversa will be fine. But, yeah, I don't know what they're doing with James Storm. Very unusual booking. Between the way TNA has booked James Storm and the way WWE has booked Ryback, I like to just, you know, tackle with the idea which characters has had their ball dropped more. But, I mean, that could be a debate for another day. I don't have no idea what they're doing with James Storm, though. So.
Yeah, well, that's the thing with Ryback. They're just kind of I don't think they really dropped the ball as much as they're trying. They kind of went to panic mode, and they just did something out of the blue to kind of turn him heel. But with James Storm, him in a guest referee role, him kind of just randomly getting attacked backstage, and that's another thing about that Impact that I watched. There was two backstage attacks. You don't need backstage attacks like that. It's something that in the wrestling business has just been blown up completely. That happens way too much. And it was just kind of, there was two in one show, and it kind of loses its pizzazz, I guess you could say. And who knows what they're going to do with James. I think Samoa Joe is a perfect guy to be the tag team partner. We haven't seen him in a while. Hopefully he's dropped a few pounds. John, I'm going to bring you back, man. What were your thoughts on Austin Aries' fine? Was that significant, or do you think there should have been a harsher punishment?
What was the number on it? I never saw a number.
It was never given. Yeah.
It was never given. Yeah,
it was an undisclosed fine.
I'm willing to bet you this was just Dixie putting something out there for the sake of, you know, putting something out there. I mean, they could have fined them $5 for all we know. You know, whatever. I said what I had to say about it last week, and especially how I felt that, you know, Dixie lets these guys get away with murder. You know, I mean, look at what Kurt Angle's gotten away with, you know. There's just no discipline in that place. And until someone does something really stupid and really bad, then maybe she'll wake up. She's fined him an undisclosed amount. It's not tolerated was a statement. Shut up, Dixie.
You know, you mentioned Kurt Angle. I am looking forward to his match with AJ Styles. They always have fantastic matches. But I think what I'm really the most curious about is we've never seen this type of match. You know, Angle, he's the babyface, and of course AJ, he's kind of in this little crow sting thing, so that'll be cool. I'm very curious to see how that match is going to go.
Yeah, it's going to be a great match.
Yeah.
I saw them wrestle live a few years, I think it was 2000, I want to say it was 2008, it was Hardcore Justice, it was here in Jersey, or Hard Justice, whatever it was called, and they had some kind of no DQ match. And it was really, really, really good. I mean, they brawled all over the place. I think the finish happened somewhere next to the stage or something along those lines. I don't even remember what happened off the top of my head, but I just remember kind of being in awe that these two had such a great match. So that's pretty awesome, and I hope this AJ Styles angle kind of, we see the next chapter on it soon. So
can I jump in on this James Storm thing real quick?
Yeah,
yeah,
sure.
Absolutely, John.
Storm's not doing anything for 2 months, minimum.
Mm-hmm.
So he's off Slammiversary?
Yeah, he's off Slammiversary. He even announced it on Twitter that he's out 6 to 8 weeks. So, you know, everything that they were shooting with him as the referee and the backstage attack was probably more so just to write him off for a little bit. As far as who his partner is, it's TNA, so obviously it's probably going to be Chris Harris because, you know, he's a big name from the past and he's a former WWE guy, you know, because Brandon Walker was legendary. But I'm with you guys on it. I anybody but that, but I could definitely see that's where this goes in July or August.
Okay.
Yeah, I know, possibly. I don't know. Who knows at this point what they're going to do? I think bringing back Chris Harris would be absolutely pointless at this point in his career. Nobody's heard from him in a while. I think they already went to that well at some point during this James Storm Bobby Roode, during the James Storm Bobby Roode feud. Didn't they bring him back at some point, though, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, they did. They brought him back. It was Beer Money, and they went up against Chris Harris and someone I can't remember. I mean,
Matt
he
Hardy.
Matt Hardy, yeah, right.
Matt Hardy teasing a mystery partner.
Yeah. And the match was okay. He was like in all right shape, but you could just tell that he wasn't in the same shape that he was in. But yeah, I'm a huge fan of James Storm. Steve Austin is like a huge fan of Storm, and he's been pushing for Storm and Joe those two in particular. He's been pushing for Storm and Joe to make the jump to WWE for years. Joe has acknowledged that he's aware of it, but he just seems to be, he doesn't want to make the move. Maybe he's low to TNA. As far as James Storm goes, I don't know. I've seen several pictures of them together on Twitter. But I'm a huge fan of Storm. But for me, in my opinion, he never really recovered from that Bobby Roode thing, you know, when Roode screwed him over, you know, and he lost the belt 2 weeks later. I mean, it led to a great heel run from Roode, but it was at the expense of Storm, you know. He never really recovered from that, in my opinion.
Well, get me started on that feud.
It's like Samoa Joe. We keep bringing Samoa Joe's name up. And he's a guy who, for a long time, we all thought he'd be the next big star in professional wrestling. And for a little while, he was. He had a great run with the TNA Championship and a great undisputed streak that went on for a long time. But I recently listened to a pretty recent Vince Russo shoot interview. And just let me say, well, we'll talk about Vince Russo on a future show because he's one of the most interesting characters in professional wrestling history. I love listening to that guy talk. I really think he's no bullshit when you get down to it. I don't think he spews a lot of crap out of his mouth. I think he speaks his truth in a lot of ways. But I'm a Russo supporter. But anyway, they asked the interviewer, I think it was Feinstein, I think it was an RF video thing, asked Russo about Samoa Joe. What was the deal with Samoa Joe? Why is he constantly getting pushed and not pushed and going off TV and whatnot? And it was simple. His weight, the guy's weight fluctuates up and down constantly. Whenever he gets in great shape, he just gets lazy or something and just puts the weight back on. And, you know, in professional wrestling, you can't do that. You have to keep your appearance what it is, unless it calls for it within the character. You have to work hard to keep that appearance. And it's something that Samoa Joe has not done. He continues to fail to do it. And that's pretty sad because Samoa Joe is, I think we can all agree, he's fucking awesome. You know, we all
love Samoa
Joe.
Yeah, but Joe's never been that guy to be in shape. So for TNA to take him off TV because he puts on a few pounds, you knew what you got in 2005 with him. So don't start acting and saying, oh, we can't do anything with you because you gained 15 pounds. Joe was never a muscle guy. Like,
no,
so
never.
For that to be the reason, that's bullshit on TNA's part.
I think that last year was definitely.
Yeah, but you got to remember as well, like, with a guy like Samoa Joe, you could really see it. And Vince Russo said, it affects his performance. And you don't really notice from the outside looking in, but when those agents are watching every move he makes, and you're not only is he getting evaluated in the wrestling ring, but these guys are also getting evaluated backstage and whatnot. You know what I mean? Every move they make, every kind of whatever they say backstage is all being evaluated. They're getting watched all the time for professional wrestling. I don't think that has nothing to do with it. So
from what I gather,
It could be body language or something along those lines. Maybe he's just not showing the passion for it as much as he did. I know he's a video gamer and stuff, and is a foodie, likes his food and whatnot, but, you know, hey, it just seems like it's not a priority for Samoa Joe to be at the top of his game in professional wrestling. And that's coming, that I think is coming from him. I don't think it's a priority for him. What do you guys think?
From what I gather, I saw a Kevin Nash shoot about 3 years ago, and one of the questions that he was asked was, they asked him, what was his relationship like with Samoa Joe, and how was he like as a worker? And Nash said that if Joe had been around during, like, the 90s, he would have fitted in the clique just fine. He basically said that Joe just kind of had a I-don't-give-a-you-know-what demeanor, and, you know, you couldn't really pull the strings, you know. So basically, Nash was really saying that Joe could have fitted into the clique, you know, if he had been in WWF in the 90s. And Nash said that, you know, after he did that shoot on Scott Hall, I don't know if you guys remember that. Remember?
Yep.
When, Hall was supposed to show up, but he didn't show up, you know, because of his personal addictions. And then Samoa Joe did that shoot, and that was a real legitimate shoot. That wasn't part of the script. And ever since then, in my opinion, then, you know, I think that TNA has kind of been afraid of Joe, because it's like, that was because, you know, at the time, TNA, they mostly had a recorded schedule, but they were on pay-per-view and they were live. And so since then, they've been very afraid to give Joe live TV time, because they don't know what he's going to say, because he's like CM Punk. But, you know, for Punk, of course, you know, he's in a bigger company, and he probably has the leeway to, you know, improvise and say some more edgy stuff, whereas Joe may not. So I think that's one of the main reasons. I just think that TNA as a company, they are intimidated by Joe. They don't trust him as far as, like, as an overall performer. They think he might say something or do something crazy. So
that very well might have something to do with it, as well as as well as like Hogan and Bischoff pulling the strings. You know what I mean? They come into this company, and like Vince Russo was saying, things changed pretty drastically when they came in. So
yeah,
the agents and the bookers and, you know, whatever, the writers, they were used to Samoa Joe being there, and they kind of knew how to handle him. But when Hogan and Bischoff come in, I guarantee you they barely knew who Samoa Joe was. You know what I mean? That's just because that's their demeanor, man. I'm sure Hogan went in there barely knowing who anybody was. I can tell you that probably for a fact. So
Dixie's fault. That's Dixie's fault at the end of the day.
Yeah, pretty much every TNA original got re-pushed when Hogan and Bischoff came in. It wasn't really until like late 2011, early 2012 that most of the originals finally get something. I mean, Daniels, AJ, Beer Money, Kazarian, all those dudes, they just got lost in the shuffle for a while. They're just now recovering, if you ask me.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And that was because Hogan and Bischoff and these guys were able to kind of see what they were made of. When they came in, they had no idea, so they had to panic and bring in the Nasty Boys and, you know, whoever else, Al Venus and Orlando Jordan. I am surprised as hell to this day we did not see Brutus the Barber Beefcake on TNA TV. I am shocked. I'm shocked we didn't see the Booty Man, you know, because I saw him recently at an independent show, and he's not in fantastic shape, but he still looks like Brutus the Barber Beefcake. You know what I mean? He still looks like the same guy. If you bring in, you know, Sags and Knobs, why the hell not bring in Brutus as well? Of course, they brought in Jimmy Hart, too, you know, so. But, folks, in just about, I'm going to say, probably 10 minutes or so, we'll be joined by Pro Wrestling Syndicate co-owner and promoter Eric Pleska, and we'll be hyping up June 8th, Monroe, New Jersey, at the Sports Center. 7 p.m. autograph signing starts, 9 p.m. bell time. It's usually 6 p.m. signing, 8 p.m. bell time, but they're going 7 to 9 this time, featuring the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes, in a huge appearance, rare New Jersey appearance for Dusty Rhodes. Also appearances by Stan the Lariat Hansen, Ron Simmons, New Jack will be in the house, as well as Shelton Benjamin, Shelly Martinez. It's going to be a great special attraction match between Colt Cabana and our guest next week, Disco Inferno. Angelina Love will be on the card. Kevin Matthews will be defending the PWS Heavyweight title against Anthony Neese in a rematch from over WrestleMania weekend. They had a fantastic match. We'll also be seeing the Headbangers on the card, the Blue Meanie, and Dan Moss and some others. It's going to be a great card. PWS always delivers. So we will be joined by Eric Pleska, and we'll be talking about a lot of different things, man. PWS is the type of company that always has some kind of drama going on, something. They're always stirring up some kind of shit in the independent scene, and we'll be talking to him about some of that stuff and hyping it up as well. But right now we're going to take a short little break so I can kind of recharge the battery since we're doing a long two-hour show, and so, you know. So you guys just sit back, relax. I'm going to play a little bit of a tune here, a little tune. And not sure which one I'm going to play. What do you guys want to hear? Huh? You want to hear the TLC theme since he's not joining us tonight, since I guess volleyball went a little long?
How about Bennett's theme since we may not be able to hear it much longer in its current format?
Well,
yeah,
good point. I can throw that out there. It's a good song. I actually emailed the Prodigy recently, and I don't read dirt sheets, so I had no idea that he was signed or whatever, or maybe he's not. I don't even know what's going on, but I emailed him.
He's supposedly in the last stages of medical screening.
So usually he's pretty good. He's always responding to my emails. He didn't get back to me at the time, and that in my mind means he's probably on his way, and good for him, man. He was our most successful show to date. And if you want to go back and listen to that Mike Bennett interview, please do so on iTunes. We also had his lovely fiance, the absolutely beautiful Maria Kanellis, was on with us in an awesome interview, so go back and listen to that. But I'm going to play the Bennett team, and we'll be back in about 3.5 minutes. And Eric Pleska will be joining us a little after the 10 o'clock hour. So keep it right here on PWC Radio. And thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
Suffer. Hurt to me. lightly, and I wish it all away, conjuring the wealth of me. Awaken demons you don't want to see. Suffer under me, suffer under me, suffer under me.
Folks, that's a kick-ass song, man. I'm a metalhead at heart. I'm a rock and roll fan. That's a great song, and we probably won't hear Mike Bennett come out to that song anytime soon in the near future, since he's probably headed to WWE, which is absolutely, positively awesome. But right now, we're going to go to the phone lines. We've got the co-owner and promoter of Pro Wrestling Syndicate. I just gave you the card before. June Ace, Monroe, New Jersey. If you're in the area, go to the show. It's going to be 7 p.m., the autograph signing, 9 p.m., bell time. If you're not in the area, you better get your ass to Jersey and go to Pro Wrestling Syndicate, the biggest, best independent promotion in all the land. Eric, what's going on, my man?
Hey, that's one hell of an introduction, man. Thank you so much. Really appreciate that.
Oh, you got it. That's what I do best, man. You know, I'm a big fan of the company, man. I enjoy it. It's not often where me being a very cynical asshole wrestling fan, where I get like this emotionally invested in an independent wrestling promotion, and this is awesome. I haven't felt this way about a promotion since ECW, and I kind of wanted to talk to you a little bit about that later on in the night. Sure. But let's talk first a little bit about your debut in Queens, New York. Recently, I guess it was last Saturday. How'd the show go in Queens, man?
Queens wasn't bad. Not the monstrous kind of draw that we've been having in Jersey, but it was a good show. Matches were very solid. We actually put a lot of the matches for free up on YouTube already. So, I mean, you can see Kevin Matthews versus Homicide, and you can see Necro Butcher and Bonesaw. Honestly, my personal favorite match of the night was the Suicidal Six-Way, where it was Pat Buck, who's, you know, my co-owner, with TWS and the head trainer at the school, and three of our students were in there as well, one of which making his debut, the lifeguard, which was instantly over, which was amazing. And it was just awesome watching, you know, three of our students in there just doing, you know, suicide dives and, you know, high spots. And it was strange to me watching the Queens crowd was giving them ECW chants, which was interesting for PWS students to be receiving. But nonetheless, you know, I'm glad people appreciated them. So it was definitely a good time, good show. You know, hopefully we'll be back in Queens sometime soon.
Well, what happened with I read somewhere that D'Lo Brown and Festus, and I'll always call him Festus. I'll never refer to him as Doc or Luke Gallows or any of that shit, that they no-showed the Queens show. Well, what was up with that? How come they no-showed?
Well, like, you know, what's weird about PWS, and, you know, if you've never been to a PWS show, Pro Wrestling Syndicate shows are a little different than the average indie, not just in, like, the type of matches that we do, but we always do, like, mini-convention-style meet-and-greets for 2 hours before the show. Because a lot of fans, you know, they come, they like the opportunity to get around, kind of mingle with people and, you know, get autographs and take pictures and stuff like that. And we'd like to, you know, give them an opportunity to do it. That being said, being that it's like a mini convention, we deal with a lot of outside vendors that come in and, you know, pay money to rent a space and they set up shop. And I had an individual vendor who actually brought, I always call him Gallows, who brought Gallows and D'Lo Brown to our double shots back in April during WrestleMania weekend. And he gave me a call. It's like, hey, you know, I'm going to have them in town. Do you mind if I, you know, bring them to your show, you know, and do autographs? I'm like, oh, by all means, that'd be great. And I was actually on the PWS bus. We had a bus trip from Raleigh, New Jersey, going into Queens. I'm on the bus, and the guy hits me up via text. He's like, hey, they got a better offer to do something else, so they're going to do that instead. Now, me personally, the end all be all, I don't care. Because at the end of the day, I know not one fan was coming specifically to see them. They weren't on the show. They were just, you know, signing autographs. And it's not, I'm not knocking them when I say that. I'm not taking anything away from them. But truth be told, like, PWS fans are there for PWS guys. And I personally, and I'll say this too, I firmly believe, you know, Starman has a larger fan base within PWS than Scott Steiner does. And that's just the way that it is now, which is, for us, is a great thing. There is some history between Pat and D'Lo, where D'Lo apparently threw his weight around a little bit to keep Pat from getting a chance in TNA, and Pat addressed him, you know, and that's kind of, you know, PWS sometimes comes across as maybe a little edgy, maybe we come across as assholes, I don't know, but we always speak out and speak our minds and you know, put things out there for the fans, like, firsthand, like, guys, here's the deal, here's what's going on. You know, these guys decided that, you know, they don't want to be here tonight, so they went and did something else. And, you know, blah, 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 and, you know, just give it to the fans straight. You know, we're never going to lie to the fans and, you know, make up stories to try to cover people. You know, they screwed up, they screwed the fans too. You know, and the fans have a right to know that. And, I mean, watching Pat cut that promo in the ring was very much reminiscent of the time Psycho Sid, you know, was supposed to be at PWS and his, you know, wallet got quote unquote stolen at a deli in Memphis. Same kind of thing. Addressed right there in the middle of the ring for everyone to hear. You know, so we like having everyone in the loop with what's going on.
Well, that's the best way to do it because there's so much bullshit. Now, I don't have to tell you, obviously, but tell the fan base out there, there's so much bullshit in the wrestling business, just liars and scam artists, especially in the independent ranks, you know, where you guys just go out there and you speak the truth all the time, and that is awesome. And you alluded to that Psycho Sid incident that took place. Tell our fans, if they don't know about it, I know the story already, but if the fans don't know, tell them exactly what you did out in the ring with when you announced that Sid would not be there.
Well, I mean, going back, it's March 2012 in Raleigh, New Jersey, and we always, you know, at PWS, we get a lot of flack from people, and I'll hit on this too, that says, oh, all PWS does is bring in names. They just bring in names, and we do bring in names. We also have a school with up to almost 40 students now. I'm actually just coming from the training school. We had an open house. We had a bunch of people. We had a guy all the way from Austria that is looking to sign up for the school. We're creating from within. A lot of what we do sometimes is we do special attraction matches where it's just these wacky kind of matches that you would never even dream up of happening anywhere. And in this particular case, it was Matt Hardy against Psycho Sid. And it's like, where the hell would you ever see that? And it's one of those matches where if you really think about it, it's like, wow, like, it becomes interesting because, like, what are they going to do? Like, what is that match going to actually be like? You know, try envisioning Matt Hardy versus Sid in your mind. Like, what are they going to do? You know, I it would be one of those I'd want to see, just to see what happens. So, I mean, you know, we had a very, very good attendance at this event, and the morning of the show, Sid called me from his home phone, and he's like, man, you're not going to believe what happened. I'm like, yeah, you're probably right. I'm like, you're supposed to be up in the air already, and you're calling me from your house. What's going on? And he explained to me that he was at a deli in downtown Memphis at 4 o'clock that morning, and his wallet got stolen. And thusly, he had no ID to board his flight. Now, me, I like to trust people. I like to believe people, even when stories are completely ludicrous. The thing about Sid was he offered no recourse. It's still early in the day. He could have got on another flight. He chose to leave the airport. He said he didn't have any other form of ID. And to me, that just it didn't make any sense. I actually did the research on it where there actually is not one deli in the entire city of Memphis that would have been open at that time. And I mean, the fact that, I mean, what, like, you're going to tell me Sid got mugged at a deli? Like, really, Sid? Sid's a big dude. Like, who's walking up to Sid and, like, stealing his wallet? Like, that's crazy. But, yeah, I mean, now me, I'm not a worker. I've always wanted to be a promoter. I never wanted to be a wrestler or a manager or a referee or anything like that. And for me personally, I respect so much the people that, you know, are in the positions where that's what they want to do. And they've, you know, sacrificed, you know, years, decades of their lives to have the privilege of being in that ring. So me personally, I'll never be that promoter to go into a ring and cut promos. In this case, my partner, Pat Buck, has been wrestling for, I believe it's 12 going on 13 years now. So, you know, he had the MC honors for this, you know, instance where Pat got in the ring and said, guys, Sid's not here. He made up the story that his wallet got stolen, and we're going to call him right now. You know, we're pissed off, too, and called him on speakerphone from the middle of the ring. The crowd was, you know, chanting, fuck you, Sid, at him, as well they should have. And then, I mean, I said, I mean, and honestly, I mean, I'll take credit, and I'll also take blame for this, because, you know, a lot of people are like, wow, that was so unprofessional. You know, I said to Pat, like, listen, like, if this is what we're doing, it's going to be very easy for any fan to turn around and say, wow, like, he probably wasn't on the phone with Sid. Like, that was probably his friend's voicemail, or that was probably the local pizzeria. I was like, we have to give out his number. We have to. I'm like, these fans paid money to see this match. And, I mean, the show was loaded. I mean, it was Colt Cabana and Jay Lethal, and, you know, it was a big show within itself. So, I mean, while Sid was the main draw, it wasn't the only draw. We offered refunds to anyone there that wanted a refund. Not one person got up to get a refund. But after, you know, the voicemail was left for Sid, I'll pass it the line. If anyone here would like to call Sid, his number is, and gave his number out. Where I, you know, a lot of fans since then have let me know that they've left various messages and had various conversations with Sid. You know, and ironically, Sid had one other booking after that, which ironically I got for him. It was up in Canada. My buddy Danny Duggan runs a company up in Winnipeg, and Sid no-showed him as well. And since then, I have not heard anything about Psycho Sid whatsoever. I've not heard him doing autograph appearances, wrestling matches, nothing. Very, very, very low profile since then.
Yeah, he had that one thing on Monday Night Raw, but that was it.
Yes, that's right. He did. He showed up for that. That's right.
Yep. Yeah,
of course.
Yeah, and
well, you know, that's a good thing, because maybe that would imply that the city of Memphis is really, you know, investing their efforts into upping the security at delicatessens at 4 in the morning to avoid future wallet mugging. So that's excellent.
Yeah, it's definitely a bullshit story on his part. There's no way, like you said, that guy's getting mugged in a deli. You mentioned the dream match factor to Pro Wrestling Syndicate, and I like that in a sense where I really liked watching John Morrison and Jushin Thunder Liger wrestle. I love seeing New Jack and Necro Butcher. And you can get those DVDs, by the way, on ProWrestlingSyndicate.com. Go check it out. The WrestleMania shows were awesome out there both nights. Absolutely loved it. But I wanted to get your opinion on this. A lot of fans are more interested at times in, like, the storyline aspect of professional wrestling. But if you look over the grand scheme of things right now in the WWE, in TNA, storylines aren't what they were 10, 15 years ago. There's not as much of a storyline-driven card anymore in wrestling. It's more about, you know, one-on-one matches, tag team matches, fighting over the belts, sometimes fighting over nothing. There's no issue whatsoever. And what's your opinion on that in professional wrestling? Do you think more storylines should start coming back, or is it just naturally transcending into an athletic type of competition?
I'm a fan of a mixture of both, if that makes sense. I mean, for me, like, I'm always a fan of a show that just starts with, like, starts with wrestling. You know, the first thing you see, the first thing I always book me personally as, if I'm a fan watching the show, if I'm a fan and I turn on wrestling on TV or I attend a show, the first thing I want to see is not someone in the ring cutting a promo, is I want to see, like, that ECW. I want to see Tajiri and Super Crazy. That's what I want to see, you know. For me, I do think that there's definitely placement for storylines, because here's my thing. I feel that if the crowd does not have an emotional connection to a particular talent, they have no reason to care. You know, and if you really, you know, think about it, you know, you're connected to the wrestlers, that there's a reason for you to care. There's a reason they're believable. You know, you want to see The Undertaker, or maybe you don't, you know, depending on how you perceive him, but, you know, The Undertaker and his streak. That's like a story without it being a story. You know, he's walking into WrestleMania, oh, God, the streak's on the line. You're connected to it. You're invested in it because it means something. You know, whereas, yeah, you're right. A lot of times it's randomly throwing matches together. With TNA, I mean, TNA is kind of a different ballgame, because with them, personally, if I was running TNA, not saying they're doing anything right or wrong, but if I was running a product on television, I would treat every episode as if people are watching for the first time, meaning I want to give them a reason to tune in again. So I don't, you know, for me personally, storylines wouldn't be very, very long and drawn out, you know, but likewise, I would focus on the wrestling aspect. I mean, if I have a locker room of guys like, you know, Chris Sabin and AJ Styles and guys of that caliber that can go, I would definitely highlight their wrestling ability more than I would highlight them on microphone. Mixture of both. I'm sorry to give you a non-answer on that.
No, it's cool. Do you see Pro Wrestling Syndicate at all maybe taking on a little bit more of that ECW type of feel? Because I was going to mention ECW before, that I kind of feel when I'm there that it's got a little bit of that ECW vibe to it without all the consistent hardcore stuff. You really don't need that, although we got that with New Jack and Necro Butcher and whatnot, which is great. It's got its place. But do you feel like ECW had a lot of those storylines that were, there was a lot of emotional connection. There was a lot of personal issues.
Absolutely.
Do you see PWS kind of going in that direction?
I think ECW was, honestly, was probably the greatest independent wrestling promotion ever. And they had a great product. And it was captivating. Like, you wanted to see what happens next. And, I mean, if we could be 1% of what ECW was, that would be amazing. You know, those are guys that, you know, we look up to. You know, I respect Paul Heyman very highly. You know, and his writing ability is phenomenal. And in my opinion, he's peerless. I don't think anyone is up to his level of creativity whatsoever, nowhere near it. So believe me, I'm very humbled to even hear PWS and ECW mentioned in the same breath. That's amazing. And yeah, I mean, for us, I mean, we like a little bit of hardcore wrestling. We like a lot of, and ECW did it too. You know, you would see guys like Psychosis. You would see, you know, Rob Van Dam. You would see, like, these good, you know, high-flying technical kind of matches, and we're huge fans of that too. You know, but I think really the one thing that ECW did was, you know, amongst many things, they really broke down that fourth wall. They had that connection to the audience, and PWS is very big on establishing a similar connection to the audience of, you know, hey, here's what's going on, here's the deal, and you guys are very, very much an important factor of this show because, I mean, honestly, the fans ultimately dictate who's over, who's not. You know, and what they tell us what they want to see, and we listen. You know, and sometimes we're dead on, and sometimes we're dead wrong. You know, and that's kind of the fun of it. You know,
yeah, absolutely. And you guys have that homegrown talent, and with a mixture of, you know, independent wrestling veterans like your world champion Kevin Matthews, who I think is absolutely awesome. He gave us a great interview just a couple months ago, So tell me this. What does Tevin Matthews mean to Pro Wrestling Syndicate at this point? Like, how would you sum him up in a few words?
I'll make a weird ECW analogy. He's our Tommy Dreamer. He's the heart and soul of PWF. He's been there from the very, very beginning and lives it, breathes it, and is all about it. You know, I mean, I just left training school. Here's Kevin, you know, in his free time, volunteers to help train at the school because he cares, because he wants to, you know. And for me, you know, too cocky or not, you know, Kevin is PWF, you know, and you know, Kevin's a great champion. I mean, as was Matt Hardy. Matt Hardy was a phenomenal champion, as was Sammy Callahan and Devin Moore. I mean, these are all guys that, you know, really have invested a lot into the company, and I appreciate that so much.
Is Kevin really going out with Shelly Martinez? Is that true?
That is true. Yeah, that is true. Wow. And Shelly is now actually a member of Reality Check.
Yeah, I saw that took place. Man, he's lucky. I love Shelly Martinez. She's awesome. Get to see her every single... That's one of the things I love about PWS, too. I get to see her every single month when I go to the shows.
Shelly,
she's awesome.
I'll be honest. I mean, Shelly is such a team player, and I'm really glad I've gotten to know her a little bit, and she's a phenomenal talent, and love having her there. I mean, it's not just, oh, that's Kevin's girlfriend. Like, no, like, Shelly's a valuable asset, and very, very happy to have her around.
Yeah, she's really cool, too. We interviewed her on Pro Wrestling Powerhouse TV, which you can find on YouTube, and she was just awesome. She was totally cool. She tried her best. I told her I've had a crush on her for probably, like, I don't know, almost 10 years or something, and she tried really hard to make me as nervous as possible, and she did a great job of it. So
sounds about right.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. How about, you know, a great – this is something we ask all our guests, and – I don't recall if I asked you this last time you were on the air with us, but I'll throw it out there again. You've been involved with wrestling for quite a while now, and I know that a lot of crazy stuff happens behind the scenes or possibly, you know, after the show, before the show, on the road, whatever. Give us, like, a candid story that you maybe never told in public, something crazy, something outlandish, something that you would like the fans to hear.
Ooh, that's a great question. It's weird because, to be honest with you, TWS never really has any internal drama. There's never really situations of, oh, this guy got into a fight with this guy in the locker room, or this guy stole this, or internally, there's never problems, there's never, like, money issues, there's never stuff like that. Our issues are always outside people. It's people that are not booked, that are hanging out, that are, you know, screwing around, or, you know, if you're familiar with the incident with a particular agent, inserting a particular wrestler into a match between John Morrison and Jushin Liger without us knowing. And just,
let me tell you real quick. When I was there, I was obviously there watching that show as a fan. I was really pumped up for that match. And when Sabu's music hit, I kind of just scratched my head, especially because nothing happened. He kind of went out there and sat down. I had no idea why this was happening, what was going on. It was weird, man. It was just a weird. There was a weird vibe in the whole building.
It was horrible, because again, it's like, here's the thing. You know, the guy that does not, Eric Sims, who's not affiliated with PWS, decided to do that without anybody knowing. Went up to our, you know, student sound guy, lied to the kid, saying, this poor kid, you know, it's like his, like, you know, second, third show as, like, our sound guy, and says, oh, you know, Eric and Pat are really busy right now, so they told me to give you Sabu's music. The kid's like, look, Sabu's on the show? Like, what are you talking about? And he's like, yeah, it's a surprise. So I play it at this particular time. And, you know, the kid was like, okay, like, you know, thought, you know, was doing what he was told, you know, and he was none the wiser to it. You know, for us, we know our fans. You know, we know that you're going to pop for Sabu as a surprise, but we also know you're going to be chanting Triple Threat and you're going to expect something to happen, and when it doesn't, you're going to be very disappointed, you know, and that we were pissed. We were beyond with that, and that led to an altercation. I'm not gonna lie about it. I mean, I punched a guy in the face. truth be told, and then he called the cops. The cops came and actually informed us that we can press charges against him. So that was a pleasant turn of events. In terms of something I never told anyone, I don't know. There was if people follow social media, we have a very love-hate relationship with Jack Sabbath from ICW, and it usually involves money. He's fallen as high in debt to me as $18,000 at any given point in time. There was one instance where two of his guys, a tag team that he pushed very highly, came to one of our shows in Rahway and got drunk and stole our tag team titles. Solar belts out of the locker room, and we had our suspicions about it. We had no proof that it was these individuals, and maybe 2, 3, 4 months later, one of the guys contacts me on Facebook and tells me that he now found God and feels bad for his sins and wants to return our tag titles that he stole. So, I mean, that's the kind of drama that goes on, where it's like, this isn't real life. Like, this can't be really happening. Like who does something like that? But that's the kind of shit that goes on. It's, for us, it's always outside people, where we are really kind of like Fort Knoxing things off from outside people to avoid future problems, you know? Even take Saturday night. I mean, Saturday in Queens, it was a great show. Everyone had fun, you know. I mean, we made money, and it's a business, you know. It was great. You know, we saw our talent get over. We saw Scott Steiner and Harry Smith, Davey Boy Smith Jr. had a phenomenal match. I think definitely exceeded any expectations there. It was awesome seeing Two Cold Scorpio revive Flash Funk. Like, that was cool, opposite Marty Jannetty, no less. And what's the only problem on the show? The only problem is a vendor was bringing in D'Lo Brown, and then last minute that changed. And then, you know, it kind of makes us look like assholes because we had him advertised. You know, there's always that outside factor with us. We just have to kind of tighten up in that aspect, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I'm friends with the guys from Russell Reaction, Frank Manzo and Joe Omega. Yeah, we're cool with them, man. They're good friends of mine. And during the intermission at night number 2, I was just kind of hanging out in the crowd, you know, and I paid for my ticket that night and everything, and I have no problem doing that. I mean, you let me in the door for free, that's awesome, but I have no problem giving you my money because I love the company and I'll support it. But they were just like, hey, come backstage. And I'll tell you what, man, I felt a little bit awkward. I felt a little weird, and I'll just tell you why, because I didn't get permission from you to go backstage. I didn't get permission from Pat. Nobody said I was allowed to do it. But I did go back there, and nobody said a word to me, but I was only back there for a little while. And to me, yeah, you're right, maybe like kind of tighten it up a little bit if that kind of thing is going to happen, because I felt weird, man. Like, you know, and my buddy ruined freaking Jushin Liger for me forever because he's like, yo, that's Liger without his mask on. And I was like, why did you even point him out? I don't want to see that.
You know, that was a weird show because for us, we came up with the idea of doing backstage passes, almost like a rock concert, so to speak. And, I mean, for us, we know a lot of our fans are big on autographs. And we also know a lot of our fans are kind of like, they kind of want to see what goes on. And for us, we're like, all right, like, let's try to come up with something to accommodate this. And the original plan was, you know, backstage, you know, before the show and during intermission and after the show, not during. And then things got a little lenient. You know, unfortunately, Pat and I can only monitor so much. You know, we have a good staff of people. Sometimes people flake out, unfortunately. So, yeah, definitely agree. Definitely have to tighten certain things up because, I mean, I know for me, I always compare it to what WWE does because, I mean, they are the best. You know, there's really no disputing. I mean, maybe fans don't like, you know, a current wrestler on WWE TV or a current storyline or lack thereof or whatever, but at the end of the day, the WWE is supreme. For me, I know I cannot go to a WWE show and, you know, walk into the locker room without permission. I can't do that. So for me, it's kind of like the same thing applies to PWS, you know, like stuff like that. It's stuff like, you know, Eric Sims parading around, like, you know, the mayor of Independent Wrestling, so, like, no. Like, stuff like that can't happen.
Yeah, absolutely, and yeah, you know, you just live and learn, man. You get better at stuff like that. Let me ask you something. I had this question for you a while ago, and I didn't ask it the last time I was online. But you're a promoter first and foremost, and you know, you guys bring in, like I said, a lot of big names from the past. You have some names that are currently hot in wrestling, but you also have these students and everything. And you know, I'm sure not all students are going to really break out. But from your aspect as a promoter, what do you look for in a talent first and foremost?
Believability and commitment. I mean, for me with EWS, I mean, like you said, I mean, we do bring in a lot of big names. There's a lot, I mean, truth be told, there's a lot of big names that, like, we'll reach out to or we'll negotiate with that if we feel like they're just looking for the quick payday, they're not actually wanting to be there, we don't book them. You know, for us, is really, we want people that want to be there. We're, you know, our you know, little tagline is always support the movement, and I firmly believe that that's what we're doing is creating something. You know, people have said independent wrestling is dead and this and that, and my response is always the same thing. It's not dead. People just aren't giving fans something that they care about. And, you know, by the grace of God, you know, fans care about what we're doing, and we're so blessed for that. You know, and that being said, I don't want, like, a wrestler in the ring, whether it's a former WWE guy or, you know, a top-tier indie guy or one of our own, you know, students or, you know, a homegrown guy that comes out and just blatantly doesn't want to be there. And it's not just about gimmick and ring. It's about, we do meet and greets, you know. I'll hit on a story to answer your question from earlier, something I never told anyone publicly. Okay. Big Van Vader. When we first booked Vader, last June for our 5-year anniversary show, it was Vader's first match in a while. He was in a coma for a while, so a lot of people don't know, and recovered. And I thought his in-ring work was great for, you know, a man of his age. I thought he was incredible. However, you know, a lot of fans all made the same remarks to us, like, man, like, this guy was kind of like a dick. Like, you know, like, I met him and, you know, I wanted to get my picture with him and just, like, people didn't get, like, that warm, fuzzy feeling about meeting Vader, who is, you know, within PWS, a babyface, you know. And Vader had hit me up to come back to PWS after that, and I told him no. And I told him the reason is the fans liked you in the ring, man, but I've gotten so many fans saying that you're a dick, and I got to respect that, you know, because here's my thing. There's another story, too. The first autograph signing I ever went to as a fan, I was 7 years old. It was the Ultimate Warrior and Ken Patera. And Ken Patera refused to shake my hand. I'll always remember this. And years later, Ken Patera hit me up to get booked at PWS to make an autograph appearance. I said, absolutely not, and I'll tell you why. Back in 1987, I was excited to meet you, and you wouldn't shake the hand of a 7-year-old kid. I had an autograph signing. It's like came up to you, like, while you're at, like, you know, a Sizzler, you know, having dinner or something. You know, it's an autograph signing. And I would never want a PWS fan to be treated that way or feel that way. You know, and that was my stance with Vader. And, you know, Vader made right by it. And, I mean, he got it and came back, and no one had any complaints and kind of did a 180. And for us, I mean, it's ballsy. For, I mean, who the hell am I to have a conversation like that with Vader? I mean, the legendary figure in wrestling, you know, titles on various continents, you know, this, that, the other, is very, very accomplished. I mean, much more accomplished in wrestling than I'll ever be, for sure. You know, but that's the way we are with talent. We always put the fans first. So that what I look for in a wrestler is someone that wants to be there and believability in that. Because our key is people that can have provide an entertainment that the fans enjoy, and I feel the fans enjoy seeing performers actually generally want to be doing something, as opposed to people that are going to go in there and mail it in and not take it seriously.
Absolutely, and I'll tell you firsthand, when I was over there at WrestleMania weekend, I said what's up to Vader, went up, shook his hand, because I was a huge fan, especially his run in WCW in 1993. I absolutely loved it, and he was really nice to me. And I didn't pay for a gimmick, I didn't buy anything from him. I just wanted to shake his hand and tell him that. And he was really cool, really nice. So I had a good experience with Vader. How about this one? You mentioned that indie wrestling, a lot of people say indie wrestling is dead. And I don't think that's the case necessarily. I think PWS proves that. But a big company that was probably the biggest company, indie company in this area, that has kind of moved on. They were bought by a big company, and now they're not as indie as they used to be, although sometimes they come off extremely indie. But not that that's a bad thing, but you know what I'm saying. What are your thoughts on Ring of Honor?
Well, here's what I can say. What I can say is, anytime I've dealt with Kerry Silkin, He's always been nothing but courteous and polite. Same thing with Delirious, very professional. There's been times that we've, you know, they'd be running on a Friday, we'd be running on a Saturday kind of thing, and, hey, we both have, you know, Kevin Steen in town, let's split the, you know, airfare or whatever. You know, and it's always been good with that. In terms of their product, I haven't really seen much of it recently, so I can't really comment. I mean, I'm familiar with a lot of guys in the locker room. Namely, the Briscoes, Steen, and Davey work at PWS as well. I mean, I have nothing but good things to say about those guys. I'm sure they have other guys there that maybe I'm not overly familiar with that are great. I mean, I know guys like, you know, like Brett Titus, guys like that have always been great. So I couldn't imagine them having a bad product because, I mean, they have such a talented locker room. Honestly, the only time I've caught a Ring of Honor show or any piece of a Ring of Honor show in the past several years was they ran a show in Rahway. And I believe it was October, if I remember correctly. It was September, October. I remember they were sandwiched between two PWS shows. There was a PWS show 2 weeks before them and one 2 weeks after them. And I remember I just went down to the building. I called at the very end, and it was Jay Lethal and Kevin Steen, both two phenomenal workers. And it was a very light crowd, a couple hundred people, 200-300 people. And the crowd was chanting bullshit and throwing garbage in the ring. And that's all I saw. I mean, I'm not judging their product based on that, but firsthand, that's all I've seen of Ring of Honor, truth be told. The one thing that annoyed me with Ring of Honor was, you know, at the Rahway Rec Center, the way Ring of Honor does their seating, I guess, they number their seats, which is different than what we do. Not saying one way is better than the other. Their way is probably more organized than our way is. You know, but they put stickers on the back of every single chair that they set up. A large percentage weren't even used, and they didn't remove them. So the next day, when we're in there, you know, cleaning shit up, because we were running our wrestling school out there, we were in there all the time, we're going through the closet, and we're like, well, why do all the chairs say Ring of Honor on them? And it's like Ring of Honor, like, you know, Section A, Seat 22. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. And it's like Pat and I wasted about an hour and a half peeling off Ring of Honor stickers. Like, come on. Like, don't do stuff like that, you know? I'm sure it was an oversight on their part, but, you know.
Yeah, that's pretty ridiculous. If they're not your, like, if they brought their own chairs, that's all fine and good. But if other people are going to use those chairs, at least take the stickers off after done with them. Yeah, that's pretty ridiculous.
I found nothing honorable about that. But as I said, I mean, I can't really comment on the products, but Carrie and Delirious have always been cool with me, so I thank them for that. Honestly, of other promotions, I would say Ring of Honor and Shikara are probably the nicest with us in terms of, you know, splitting talent that's in town like the same weekend and just being professional with one another. So definitely appreciate them as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. I've had some experience backstage at Ring of Honor, and everybody was always pretty cool. And one guy you mentioned that was really nice to me, and I know how to handle it. I'm not a wrestler, but I know when you're backstage at a wrestling show, the thing to do is you want to introduce yourself, shake everybody's hand, and just kind of break the ice, so to speak. And one guy who was absolutely awesome to me was Jay Briscoe. And
sure.
He was really, really nice. He tried to give me, like, some Jack Daniels and stuff when I was back there. He was a cool dude. And, you know, and I was raring up because I was involved in an angle that night where I actually got my ass kicked by Kevin Steen. I had to, like, I was security for the night, and I had to run down to the ring and try to hold Steen back. Because I was one of the biggest security guards out of anybody. All the guys were short. So Steen pointed at me and said, are you trained? And I was like, no. He's like, can you take a punch or a kick? And I'm like, yeah, I guess. So I went to the ring. Kevin Steen, he kicked my ass. Yeah, he kicked my ass pretty good. But anyway, Jay Briscoe, as you know, he's been in the news recently about his controversial comments. And a lot of people have different takes on it. And I just wanted to get your opinion, if you know what happened. What were your thoughts on Jay Briscoe's comments?
You know, I'll be very honest. All I saw was Jay Briscoe remove Twitter account. I've never used Twitter. I don't look at Twitter. I've never tweeted. So I have no idea what Jay tweeted about. I believe it was gay marriage, was it, if I remember the article correctly? But I honestly don't know what was said. I really don't know what was said. I can tell you.
It was something along the lines of, you know, Delaware just passed this gay marriage bill, And if you're into that, cool. But if you teach, what did he say? Okay, I got it right here. It's like, the Delaware Senate passed a bill yesterday that allows same-sex couples to get married. If that makes you happy, then congratulations. Then in the following tweet, he says, try and teach my kids that there's nothing wrong with that, and I'll fucking shoot you. So that's where the controversy comes in. He said, try and teach my kids that there's nothing wrong with that, and I'll fucking shoot you. I really have, we talked about this last week on the show, and it was a big topic. But is that the type of thing that will be a drawback in getting, you know, for Jay Briscoe getting future bookings around independent wrestling organizations or even making it up to the big leagues? Because he's currently the Ring of Honor world champion, and that's got to have a little bit of significance on the scene. So after hearing exactly what his comments were, what are your thoughts on what he had to say?
I'm surprised here Jay Briscoe would need to shoot someone. Jay Briscoe punched the average person in the face. They're probably not getting up. So I don't know. I mean, personally, I mean, I do believe in freedom of speech. I do believe that people, want to speak their mind. They should be able to. If, you know, someone has their own Twitter account, they can tweet whatever the hell they want. Me, personally, I don't really engage in the online drama, hence I don't use Twitter. In terms of saying he'll shoot people, I mean, I don't know. Figure of speech, maybe physical threat, I don't know. I mean, maybe that's the... I was kind of half serious when I said it, but I mean, honestly, I mean, Jay's a tough dude. He don't need to shoot anybody. I get what he's saying, though, but, to me, also, I mean, Jay Briscoe is a person. Jay Briscoe is not an entity of Ring of Honor Wrestling. Unless I'm wrong, which I apologize if I am, but I don't know. I mean, if Kevin Matthews said something like that on Twitter, I wouldn't get on. I'd be like, dude, you got to get up on the wrong side of the bed today. Like, what's your problem? You know, I don't think I would be, crucifying him about it.
Exactly. A lot of people were really up in arms, and I kind of took a middle of the road type of standpoint on it. And that's exactly how I feel. I have my opinion on it. We talked about it last week. So if anybody listening wants to go listen to that show, find it on iTunes or right here on blogtalkradio.com. But he did apologize at a show last weekend in front of a crowd. I don't think it was a Ring of Honor show, though. I think it was some other independent show. Maybe it was. Maybe it was a Ring of Honor house show. But, he did apologize, public apology, and that's sufficient for me. I don't think there needs to be any kind of penalty. I don't think he should be penalized from being the Ring of Honor world champion. I think that's awesome that he was able to achieve that feat. And, I'm happy for the guy. So good for him.
I mean, again, I always... You know, as I said before, I always go back to compare it to WWE. Now, you have Jack Swagger, who was, on TMZ for being arrested, and WWE did not strip him of his title match at WrestleMania. And perhaps that was the right thing to do, perhaps it wasn't. That's a matter of opinion. But the way WWE handled it, they let it go. That being said, something like this, to me, is very minimal in comparison.
What about what Austin Aries did? Did you see that last week? Or 2 weeks ago, I believe it was.
I saw the clip on YouTube because that actually I was curious to see what people were talking about. Christy Hemme says the wrong name and Austin Aries gyrates. I don't know, man. I knew Austin Aries before PWS existed. And, not name dropping. I mean, he's not like a close personal friend or anything, but getting to know him a little bit. I would always view him as a very professional guy. That, I thought it was funny. I mean, maybe that makes me a dick for saying so, but I thought it was funny that he, because what was he supposed to do, no sell it? I mean, she clearly said the wrong name. What's he supposed to do? You know, he had to do something. I mean, if I was at a PWS show and that happened, I mean, the first thing would be, like, I would say the ring now to get your head out of your ass, and I would leave it at that. I'm sure it was an honest mistake on Christy Emmy's part. She's been doing this a long time. You know, I'm sure it was an honest mistake. Maybe she was given the wrong cue cards. Who knows? You know, but to me, looking in, I mean, Austin had to do something.
Yeah, and then they were kind of like pointing at her and saying whatever. But I think Spike TV got all up in arms because I'm sure people were out there that emailed them and complained that it was some kind of sexual harassment.
But to me, again, too, I mean, really? I mean, do people watch wrestling? I mean, do girls have never given guys bronchobusters before? That's never happened. What's the difference? I mean, it's like you have a group of guys like in their, you know, 40s telling them to, you know, suck on their genitals. I mean, that's okay. How's that any different?
Right, and I get that point. I just think, you know, it was kind of a pointless thing for him to do, and apparently he was fined, and he apologized publicly, which was cool. It was, in my opinion, it was a little bit pointless, but hey, it's all said and done, it's over with, and you know, it was just another like.
But isn't TNA taped? I mean, they're not running these shows live, are they? I mean,
that was live. They're doing live every other week now.
Oh, that right there should serve as proof of how little I watch TNA, which is not a knock. To be completely honest with you, I never remember when it's on. I really don't. Honest to God, don't. I cannot retain that information.
And they're changing it again. They went from they were 8 o'clock Thursday nights till 10 o'clock, and now they're going back to 9 o'clock Thursday nights until 11 o'clock. So
I hope they find something that works for them. You know, I mean, that'd be cool. But yeah, I honest to God never remember when their program's on.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. I just DVR it and then get to it when I can, because being here on Big Time Radio, I kind of feel obligated to watch it every week, and you know, that's just how it is. We're going to talk about it. I want to know what the hell I'm talking about. So June, let's talk a little bit about June 8th when we wrap this up, man. Big show, Monroe, New Jersey. I know you guys are out of the touch now. I kind of like that venue. That was pretty cool. But you're going to be in Monroe now at the Sports Center, and 7 p.m. autograph signing starts, your little mini convention, which I think is an awesome idea. And then at 9 p.m. bell time, tell us a little bit about the card, man. What you expect at PWS?
The unofficial 6-year anniversary of PWS. I mean, we're going pretty big into Monroe. A big fan of this building. It's a very large basketball gymnasium with a balcony, fully air-conditioned, big parking lot. So that's all fantastic. Guest commissioner, Dusty Rhodes, definitely looking forward to that. I'm curious, you know, as commissioner, this means he can make changes to the card. He can add stipulations. So he has that creative power, so that'll be interesting. The Lariat, Stan Hansen. I'm excited to have a gentleman who actually is a Lariat, not an independent guy that calls himself a Lariat for no apparent reason, at CWS. Blatant shot there, DJ Hyde. How you doing? Thanks for calling the fire marshal on us. What else? We have Cole Cabana against Disco Inferno. That, to me, that's a dream fight. I think if fans like entertaining wrestling, that's as good as it could possibly get. I mean, really think about that, Cole Cabana and Disco Inferno. Kevin Matthews against Tony Nese. This will be Matthews, Nese, Chu. This will be for the PWS heavyweight title. Alex Reynolds against Dan Moss. There's still a lot of stuff we haven't announced yet, still some other names. We have the Headbangers taking on the Southside Players Club. That should be a good one. The PWS tag team titles. We actually have two students that currently have the tag titles, Black Hollywood, who have come leaps and bounds from when they began training less than a year ago. They're taking on the Heavenly Bodies, which is Gigolo Justin and Desirable Dustin. They were given the gimmick of the Heavenly Bodies passed down by Dr. Tom Pritchard, so no gimmick infringement there. That was one of my favorite moments of PWS Supercard, was seeing the Heavenly Bodies passed down to two of our guys. I thought it was brilliant. Starman will be in action, leading his four-on-four elimination match, like kind of Survivor Series style. Starman, the Blue Meanie, the Drunken Swashbuckler, and Fala taking on four members of Reality Check. And La Rosa Negra, the newly crowned women's champion of PWS, taking on Angelina Love. Now, a little bit of something for everyone. We saw some stuff not announced. New Jack will be there signing autographs, as will Shelton Benjamin and Ron Simmons. So chance to take advantage of getting to meet a couple, old school legends, and Shelton Benjamin, tremendous talent as well. So, something for everybody, hopefully.
Absolutely, going to be awesome. I'm definitely going to be there on June 8th, so I expect anybody who's listening, if you can get to Monroe, New Jersey, June 8th, the Pro Wrestling Syndicate, get your ass there, enjoy a great wrestling show with some awesome names from the past, present, and the future of professional wrestling, and that's what it's all about. It's about professional wrestling, having a good time, and that's what I like about PWS. thanks for being with us tonight, Eric, man. We appreciate it. And hopefully next week we can get the Disco Inferno booked on the show. That would be pretty awesome.
That'd be great, man. Thank you so much for thinking of us. Definitely appreciate it, and my pleasure as always.
Anytime, brother. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
that was
man. Take
Eric.
Care.
You got it, brother. Eric Pleska, otherwise known as Eric Tapout in a lot of circles in the wrestling business, Pro Wrestling Syndicate co-owner, promoter, very candid, great interview. Definitely get out to Pro Wrestling Syndicate, Monroe, New Jersey, June 8th. He has some great, candid stories tonight. And he always seems to be pretty, you know, he tells the truth. They don't bullshit at PWS. That's what I like about him. I'm going to bring back my co-host, Toph. Toph, man, what'd you think of the interview tonight with Eric from PWS?
He seems like a cool guy. I got to get more familiar with the PWS promotion, but I've heard a lot of good things about it. I see their stuff on YouTube all the time. I just haven't had the time to look, but I'll be sure to definitely check that out so I can offer some more questions next time you interview him.
Yeah, so like you mentioned this, the tag team Black Hollywood, who've been training for less than a year now, and they're awesome. These guys are very agile. They're high spot kings. They're very, very good in the ring, and they're cool dudes, man. They're really cool. So, yeah, PWS has a little bit of everything. That's why I like it. It's different, man, and it's going to be cool to see Dusty Rhodes. It's going to be cool to see Stan Hansen as well, man. How often is Stan the Ladder Hansen ever around this area? I don't think I've ever seen him here, so that's cool to see, too. So check them out at ProWrestlingSyndicate.com and at Pro Wrestling Syndicate on Facebook, where they just reached over 5,000 likes, which is huge for them. And it was a great interview, great having them on. So, this just about wraps up PWP Radio tonight. Tell us, man, you have any final comments tonight for the wrestling fans at all, anything?
Nope, unfortunately I don't. We pretty much talked about everything tonight.
Awesome.
Oh, wait,
and,
one more thing. I like Big E's theme. Weird. That's about it, though.
Awesome. This week on PWP Radio Network, we've got multiple shows. This coming Thursday night, we've got a big interview, special guest, Katarina Lee Waters, who you might know as Winter, or Katie Lee Burchill, will be live on the Oh You Didn't Know show this coming Thursday night. So definitely get there to PWP Radio. Get right here, blogtalkradio.com/PWP Radio, this coming Thursday night. I love Katarina Waters, man. Not only is she gorgeous, but she is an awesome wrestler, and it'll be great to have her on. That'll be Thursday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You can always call in and talk to Katarina Waters. Katarina, I think it's called. Yeah, Katarina. I would say it differently. But, yeah, Katarina Waters, call in, 760-888-5749. And Pro Wrestling Obsession Live will be this Friday, and they'll have independent wrestler Joey Image on the show. So tune in Thursday night and Friday night for Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio. Next week, right here on the show, we will have the Disco Inferno. Glenn Gilberti will be with us, man. That's going to be cool, that Disco Inferno on the line, man. We'll talk about his match coming up with Colt Cabana, wrap up a little bit more hype for PWS, June 8th. I also want to announce that June 25th this year we'll be having a Chris Benoit show, where we'll talk about the whole Chris Benoit incident, his career, whatever's left of his legacy. Hopefully you guys can call in. We'll get different opinions, have a nice long debate and discussion about the late crippler Chris Benoit. There's a lot to talk about, you know. But we have like 10 minutes left in the show, and I just wanted to debut like a new little segment, which I'm going to call deadlifting, a topic in professional wrestling. And it's kind of like my final thought, so to speak, that Jerry Springer does. And one thing I just wanted to talk about, and I'll start it off this way. People in the internet wrestling community, they don't seem to understand the business aspect of professional wrestling in a lot of senses. You know, I keep hearing how John Cena, there needs to be a change. They need to take John Cena off the top. He shouldn't be WWE champion. This and that and the other thing. Turn him heel, whatever. Listen, he's the face of the companies. And I'm not just saying that because he's the guy on a cereal box. He's the guy that they send to Make-A-Wish Foundation. He's the man who is always on the talk shows and always doing everything that's, you know, whatever, big in the WWE universe. What I'm talking about is he's the number one babyface. He is the guy that will be on top until somebody knocks him off. You cannot turn John Cena heel until you have another face of the company to take his spot. People go back, and especially Pat, who's a friend of mine and a listener to PWP Radio, he says, well, you know, Austin and The Rock shared the ball. You know, Hogan and Savage and Ultimate Warrior shared the ball. That's different because they've tried this in WWE now. They've tried to they gave Cena and Batista both a shot. And what happened? Cena ultimately won. They gave Randy Orton and Sheamus both a shot. And what happened? Both guys flopped in the grand scheme of things. Both guys flopped. They didn't get over as baby faces like they should have, and John Cena still reigned supreme. They've given guys chances over and over and over again. The closest guy to take over John Cena's spot as face of the company since he's had it is CM Punk. He came the closest, but during his reign as champion, he realized, he's a smart guy, man, he realized that he just was not going to exceed John Cena. WWE did not feel comfortable in giving CM Punk that ball full throttle to run with. As you know, he wasn't the last match to close out pay-per-views. He usually wasn't the final segment on Raw. The whole John Cena, John Laurinaitis storyline was above whatever CM Punk was doing with Daniel Bryan, Kane, AJ Lee, etc. That is something where CM Punk probably said, hey, if I can't be the top babyface, I'm going to be the top heel. And it's something that he achieved, and it was smart on his part, if it was his idea or if it wasn't his idea, whatever the case may be, it was smart. CM Punk's a smart guy. He doesn't need to be the face of WWE. He just doesn't need it. He's too good to need it. Randy Savage is a perfect example. Back when he won the WWE Championship at WrestleMania 4, that storyline with him and Hulk Hogan was started that night. Even before that night, on Saturday Night's Main Event, when Hogan came to save Savage from the beatdown from the Hockey Talk Man and the Hart Foundation. Miss Elizabeth ran backstage. It's one of my favorite moments in wrestling history. Hogan came in, started clearing house. That is when the angle started. And Vince McMahon, Pat Patterson, whoever was booking the company at the time, knew for a damn fact that that angle was going to end at WrestleMania 5. They knew what they were doing. They're not stupid. They took Savage and Hogan, and they created this storyline that lasted almost 3 years. Because if you think about it, after WrestleMania 5, when Hogan won the belt back from Savage, what happened? Savage became the Macho King, and the feud reignited. They were tearing it up in the house show scenes. They had that match at, SummerSlam, I believe? Or something. They had a bunch of matches where Zeus was involved. They had that cage match. You know, so Savage was never really held the ball with Hogan. They tried it again. They tried to give it to the Ultimate Warrior in WrestleMania 6. And Hogan, you know, he was winding down. The Hulkamania thing was kind of running out. But they gave it to Warrior, and what happened? It just didn't work out. It's the same thing with Randy Orton. It just didn't work. He's not Hulk Hogan. He's not the face of the company. He wasn't going to be that guy. They tried to force it. It wasn't happening naturally. They gave it a shot. It didn't even last a year, and look what happens. Hogan's back on top of WrestleMania 7. With John Cena, no matter if he wins or loses, he is the face of the company until he feels he's ready to not be anymore, or until somebody comes along and knocks him off the top. And that is the truth. And if you think anything different, you're just naive to the point. Don't get me wrong. It would be fucking cool if John Cena turned heel. That would be a cool thing. It'd be a moment that would last in history, you know, just like how Stone Cold Steve Austin, when he turned heel in WrestleMania 7, is looked upon as amazing. Wrong. It's not. People don't like that moment. People look back on that and think it was a huge mistake. WWE tried to fix that mistake almost immediately. You know, they had Austin be involved with the Alliance to try to get him over more as a heel, and it just didn't work. The run didn't last a year. Why would you, you know, try to make that happen not naturally? Why would you give John Cena some kind of heel turn where there's nobody to combat him as a babyface? Half the reason Austin's heel turn didn't work is because The Rock was gone filming movies. They tried to throw him in there with the Hardy Boys, with Undertaker, with Kane, whatever the case may be, and it just wasn't working because the protagonist, your big baby face, wasn't there. Right now, if you turn John Cena heel, who's the baby face? Who's the guy that's going to combat him? Who's Sting to his Hogan? There is nobody. He's not there. Not Sheamus. We've seen that match before a bunch of times. Not Orton. We've seen it before. It's not Daniel Bryan. I love Daniel Bryan, one of my favorite wrestlers in the entire world. I've been following his career for years, almost a decade now. I love the guy. Awesome. Awesome in the ring, awesome competitor. I'm bigger than Daniel Bryan. I am taller than him, and I am probably just about the same body structure as Daniel Bryan is. That, believe it or not, folks, has a lot to do with it, and it always will. Daniel Bryan's not the guy. It's just not. You can't force it. You just can't force it. You can't take John Cena and say, because his character is stale, let's just turn him heel. Not going to happen. So be patient, wrestling fans. Let it play out. You know, John Cena eventually will turn heel, and let's hope that when it happens, it knocks everybody off their chairs and is the biggest surprise that we've seen in wrestling in a long, long time, because that is the only way it'll work. So for TOF, JCD, and Pro Wrestling Syndicate co-owner and promoter Eric Pletzka, thanks for joining us here tonight on Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio. Don't forget, join us this coming Thursday night for a special exclusive interview with Katarina Lee Waters, a.k.a. Winter, a.k.a. Katie Lee Burchill, and Friday night for Pro Wrestling Obsessions. And right here next week, we'll have the Disco Inferno for an exclusive interview, which will be awesome. If you have questions for the one, the only, the incomparable, Disco Fever himself, Disco Inferno, please send them my way. Follow me on Twitter, at PW Powerhouse. Send me your question. Go on Facebook, Pro Wrestling Powerhouse. Just type it in your search bar. It'll come up. We've got about 1,986 likes. We're 14 more away from 2,000. Facebook's being a pain in the ass. They don't advertise their stuff anymore. So go on there, share something. Hit that like button. Do what you can to support the show. Head on over to our Amazon store, and always go to ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. Thanks all for joining us tonight, and keep it real, everybody.